you in charge of the meeting, Mike, you can hurry us right along.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, so we are recording.
Let's get the motion items taken care of.
So where? Okay, so number one. Well,
you've
so
called the meeting to order.
So we've got a quorum. We'll call the meeting to order, and we do have a quorum. Correct. Is there a motion to approve the minutes for the March 5th, 2025?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Our next action item is going to be the ICRPO fiscal year 2026 funding discussion.
Okay.
Let's discuss.
That's me. So every year to fund my position the part of my position that does all of the organization. So what we do is we do planning support, we facilitate transportation planning coordination, which is what this meeting is. We participate with transportation studies, participate with the Iron County traffic demand model, and maintain the transportation priority list and COG priority list. So we come annually at this time of year to request funding from the COG to do these activities. And if you see on the handouts, the second page is a letter that I've written to this organization explaining what that is. There's some examples of projects that have been funded. Last month we presented this in the advisory committee. They motioned to bring this to this group for approval and to pass it. And to pass on to the COG for their approval. So we're seeking $50,000 from the Iron County Corridor Preservation Fund, which is the same as what we asked for last year. This funding amount, we will also be seeking a matching fund from UDOT. Last year that was $10,000. Hopefully we will get at least the same. And we will continue to provide all the support that we've been doing in the past. And that's really the presentation. If you all have questions, I'm happy to answer. Also, Rob and Reed have been around for a long time in this organization and help answer any questions for that as well. But
I make a motion that we actually, do you want me to make a motion or do you want to make a motion? This is an RTIC. But I was representing us.
Go ahead.
I make a motion that we continue the funding as presented consecutive to last year.
She's here, so she has to make it.
Sorry, she can say, as Dan just said, and then we'll go on.
As Dan just said, I make that motion.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Next action item is going to jump down to number 6, corridor preservation priority list approval.
All right,
action 8.
And again, so the corridor preservation priority list, we had a discussion at our last RTEC meeting about this. Just to recap what it is again, it is a list of regional transportation priorities that will need right-of-way procurement for future projects. The list is updated not more than once a year, so about this time every year we bring this to this body and then spend to the COG at the next meeting for approval. Projects must be on the list in order to qualify for COG funding. RTAC members reviewed the list. So I sent the list out to all of the advisory committee. They reviewed it, made some suggestions. We made those changes in the list. Most of them were just clerical, better describing what the projects were so we can get projects funded in the future. Does anyone else have any needed before this gets approved? Do we need to add anything or make any additional changes at this time?
Looks to be no discussion. Call for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve the corridor preservation list as it's presented.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Commissioner, yes, on the next item, Molly's the chair since she's here.
Oh, perfect.
We'll need her to take over.
Excellent. Good.
May I interrupt enough to just say Eric Sweat is online. He's trying to join, but he can see that you're talking, but he has no audio.
No. My bad.
Tell him to read lips.
Okay. Sorry, Eric.
So we've had a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Who seconded that?
I did.
Okay. Back to Molly.
So we're jumping back to item number 4?
Yes.
Okay, SS4A update by Reed Erickson.
We also had Eric Sweat join us online here for just a minute to talk a little bit about that as a quick update. We just wanted to mention that all of the entities have been reviewing that draft. Eric has got it finalized in the next day or so to get to the County Commission packet, but it's all of the same information that you've been reviewing. And it's on the agenda for Monday's approval by the County Commission, so that's an adopted safety action plan that came out of the SS4A grant study, and that will then entitle each entity based on the projects that were identified or others that you have identified that are similar to ones that were identified in the plan to apply for funding, either through an implementation grant or through a
demonstration
and something, I can't remember the name of that, demonstration and something grant. And so
demonstration and planning.
And planning grant. And if hopefully you've been talking about what projects you want, and Eric and his team are prepared to help with that. So with that much introduction, Eric, can I turn the time over to you for a second?
Sure thing. Yeah, if you can hear me.
You bet.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think you covered most, Rita. I do want to say thank you for everyone's participation. All jurisdictions participated, and we're, like Reed said, we're wrapping up the final plan now. We're incorporating the comments received on the final report and the project sheets and all components of the plan. We'll present to the commission on the 12th. We are ready to help with applications for the next round of funding. Those applications are due June 26th. So if your jurisdiction or your agency wants to submit on those, there needs to be some action now and be prepared to submit on June 26th. And like you said, this action plan, once adopted by the commission and approved, if approved, qualifies every agency or jurisdiction within the county as it serves as a qualified action plan to allow them to apply for either of those next grants in this next round of funding. So the base qualifications are there. You just now need to decide if you want to pursue any other funding. You can apply with one of those grants. And happy to provide more information to anyone. And we're working with the county, obviously, and we'll work on an application there, but happy to support anyone else if needed. So,
generally speaking, those grants are 25% local match, 75% federal funding. And hopefully you've been looking at some of those things that came out of the safety action plan, and those are the ones that would best qualify or set best as an application. And the county is willing to cooperate and work with any of the entities in terms of any of the projects that you have and that we have. Like if we were going to do striping, we could include that throughout the county and in the incorporated areas all together, and we could all bid that and then each share our part, or you know how we want to split that up. But you can apply individually, or we can apply together from the county and include things within your jurisdiction as well if there are things that we're doing that are similar. So we just wanted to make that invitation and let us know how we can help. And Eric is a great sounding board to run past ideas and applications and thoughts that may qualify and may not. He has a good handle on what kind of things get funded and what doesn't. And Eric, you shared, and you may want to just summarize, but it's really hard to qualify for an implementation grant. That's work that is actually physical things that are done, like widening lanes and putting in a roundabout, or anything that requires I would say construction, anything that can show demonstration or planning that, like striping or signs or things that are not necessarily changing the permanent infrastructure, have a much better chance of qualifying, and there's more money available that goes to those, and there's a lot more projects that gets funded because we're now competing on a national level. Everybody across the country is applying for these funds, and there's just a lot more. So, Eric, is that adequate, or do you want to explain that further?
Yeah, the two planning or the two grant types available in this particular program are the planning and demonstration is one, and then the second is implementation. And like Reed said, the implementation, I don't want to discourage any applications there. It's just, it's more competitive because the projects are larger, and those type of projects, as Reed described, are infrastructure changes, new roadway alignment, road widening, major signal installation or things like that. So physical infrastructure changes, they are more competitive because it's less of a funding pool and the projects cost more overall. The planning and demonstration grants, there's a pretty broad umbrella of items that could be included in those. It's not just a planning study or a safety study. You can certainly include those, but it can also, like Reed mentioned, you can dive into some of the demonstration techniques if you're wanting to test something within your jurisdiction or agency, or if you want to try some temporary things that could possibly improve safety. It covers an umbrella of a broad range of those items, including some signing, some striping, some potential movable barriers and things like that you can potentially do and call a demonstration type grant. It just cannot be a permanent infrastructure change. But it also allows you to dive in if you have a certain corridor or a group of intersections you want to look at and at least start getting some concepts of potential improvements. Those type of items could also fall under a planning and demonstration grant. So it's more than just a broad study. You can take a little deeper dive if there's something specific you want to explore or investigate or get a little head start. You just can't fully design and construct under a planning and demonstration grant. So there's a lot of nuances. I'd be happy to act as a sounding board, if you will. I certainly don't know all, but I'd be happy to share with what I've seen other places do and have been successful in applying for those. But there's some options there. I will say the planning and demonstration grant application is not a huge endeavor. It's possible to do with your staff. It's fairly easy. There's simple information to include. It's not robust. It's a few pages. The implementation grant applications are obviously a lot more detailed. They want to see some plans and some costs and et cetera. So pending what you could possibly do, there's some options there too. Many options. I'd be happy to explain more. But
thank you, Eric.
Yeah.
All right. No other discussion on that topic. We can move to item 5, which is the frontage road realignment design at South Parowan Exit. And Dan Jessen will be sharing that information with us.
I have a map ready if you're ready.
By the way, it's EN on Jessen, just for the record. Just for the minutes. I'm just giving you a hard time, but it is EN. So you may have noticed that we've had a fair amount of commercial development going on around our intersection, the south intersection, exit 78. Right now, in fact, it doesn't even look like this map anymore. We have the Maverick going in. We have an equipment dealer that's already in. We have a hotel that's built. Ace is almost built. We're about ready to build another Terribles. We have some alignment issues right off the exit there that's leading to results in a traffic study that are not very compatible with business use, and everybody with a piece of property is trying to figure out what they can do with it. So we're trying to get ahead of this just a little bit and do some planning for a potential realignment of the frontage road.
Dan, you have the mouse if you want to point.
Oh, I do?
Yeah.
Okay.
The residents lost their minds when you changed it the last time.
I know. So the problem is right here, you cannot do a left in. And that was a UDOT thing based on the traffic study. And the reason being that
put a roundabout in.
This frontage road comes in, and if you have any stacking trying to turn left of semi-trucks, then you're now blocking the frontage road. And so if you're building a convenience store right here with a Starbucks, that's right, maybe, we'll see. It's on their plans. And you have a hotel and you have an Ace and you can't do a left turn in, you can see why they are kind of losing their minds and saying, what can we do, what can we do? So they, the commercial owners have wondered, what if we realign this frontage road? And so we were to take that frontage road out here and come in so the frontage road aligned with their private drive that came in here. Now you could stack, you know, five semi-trucks back before you create another problem with the off-ramp here. This interchange, UDOT knows, needs to be redesigned, probably widened. It was only ever a flyover, which they added on-ramps and off-ramps to. It was never really designed as a full interchange. And we know that with all this traffic, it's going to fail sometime in the next 10 years or something like that. So
yeah, we're pretty concerned about it with all the gas stations going in and the trucks, because them waiting to turn to get onto I-15 after they gas up, there's no room on the structure for left turn pockets. So it's only going to take one or two trucks to completely basically block the entire road through there as they're waiting to turn. So we definitely need to look at this to say, what are the options trying to improve this? Because it's currently not even on our plan to say that we need to do anything with. And so it's going to be really difficult to get funding. So we want to look to say, what is it going to take? Is there any some interim solutions that would help this until we can get it into a fiscally constrained phase of our plan? To say, when do we need it and how are we going to fund it to make some improvements?
So I guess what we're trying to do, we do have the interchange. I believe we have the interchange on our RPO list. We don't have the frontage road realignment. And as I talked to Chris, he said that he potentially had some money from a different project that wasn't going to happen, but it needed to be on the RPO plan as an item just to qualify for that. Our goal being, let's actually design something. We can then adopt it into our transportation master plan. That way, if this guy comes in tomorrow for a building permit, we can say you need to comply with our commercial master plan. That's worst case scenario. Best case scenario, we can get all of these property owners to pitch in the money to actually pay for the realignment of this road right now.
Will the KB pump stations and all that be in the way for that to line up? Will that be in an easement situation, or if that comes straight across?
No, so the west boundary of theirs is kind of like half of the driveway. That would actually just function. This would just be widened to be.
Just looking at it with the lines, it doesn't look like you'd have an easement problem in vision.
So the Bettridges, as you know, sold KB to Parkland USA. They still own this.
They still own that one right there.
And the nice thing about this realignment is not only would it be advantageous for traffic flow if you can remove that barrier, have that left in, left out, because it's a true intersection. It's a huge advantage to these guys. But to these guys, this is the Morris brothers that own this. They're farmers, but their dad, Claire, passed away, and I don't know how long they want to farm. It's zoned commercial. That would give them additional frontage all along their property, which would be commercial frontage, which is an advantage. The Bettridges could actually square up their property depending on what we could do. In some sort of a property trade situation, which is more of a buildable piece of property. And I think that we can find a win-win-win, but we got to have a design. In order to get a design, that's where we want to add it to the list so that we can do that. And I don't know, Chris, would you want to, in that design, design the whole intersection, the whole interchange, or just this east side of it, or
so,
what do you
so
think?
The funding I can get is just for a study, so we can give us a concept level.
Okay.
This is where it needs to go. We wouldn't be able to do a full design, maybe just like a 30% design to get a concept level.
Well, concept level is good enough for our master plan.
Okay, and so that's what we
can
need
get to draw
to
a line
concept
on
the map. Level to say here's where it needs to be. It would require some more design once it was ready to be constructed. But yes, we we want to look at all the options through there, and not just right there. We want to look at both sides.
Sure.
Look at some of the time frame of development and maybe full build out of the whole area to say what is this interchange going to need in the future, and then kind of phase how we're going to basically try and fund it for UDOT's portion of it. And like you said, the city can change their master plan to get that taken care of when development happens.
What did I say? What's the deal, huh?
So
that comment segues into my question, my concern on the west side. The construction road for the Maverick concerns me on that right on that corner.
Which you're talking over here?
Yeah. They've got it so close to the curb that it's a blind look over your left shoulder coming out.
They're going to be making some modifications. UDOT made Maverick make some modifications to actually both sides of the interchange to some degree. And then their entrance, they have two entrances, one over here and one here. And the construction, I don't know if that's where the permanent entrance is or not, but I believe it went through our access
management. Have you seen it? Have you gone out yet, Dan? Mm-hmm. Coming from the west isn't bad. Coming from the east, it's... You know something's going, and all of a sudden, whether we just cut brush or something,
yeah,
it's concerning.
Okay.
And if you could, I know it's city limits, so I have
looking at the design of it, there wasn't a problem, but boots on the ground can be different, especially if we need to do some.
They've got quite a large exit for their construction, but it corrals the corner. Like I said, for them coming out, it's a view to the left over their left shoulder. It's not a very inviting. It's not something we'd normally want to do.
Yeah.
So anyway, and you're going to look at that anyway, right? Can you include that in the study?
Yeah. So we want to look at that whole area.
Yeah. Okay.
To say what are our options? Because like I said, the way that curves around and the way that accesses, we probably want to look at solutions to say what are options to change that. Put more spacing there, so when that does get busier, the interchange, can we realign ramps to give us more space? You know, what are the different options? What are the benefits? What are the cons? And we'll do it through our solutions development process, which is goal-oriented, which we set goals at the front, say, what are we trying to accomplish? Put a couple of ideas out there to say, here's some different things. How do they compare to accomplishing those goals? And then come out with, say, this is what kind of what the solution is that best... fulfills the goals that we're looking for.
Like 10 years from now, that entire interchange is going to be surrounded by commercial stuff. So if we can get ahead of it on the planning, we're not going in and eminent domaining and taking buildings out when the interchange ultimately is failing. And that's, we're just right there. Everybody with a piece of property is coming in with ideas and thinking and selling and, so it's like, now's the time.
Yeah, my own thoughts are, at the very least, that entrance, and I don't know where the master plan is because it didn't come across my desk for obvious reasons. We kept pushing it back to you. They kept calling us, and we kept saying, no, that's...
We did have a meeting with the county. Reed was on there. It was a Zoom meeting.
Oh, okay.
We jumped
I was
mill
probably out of town.
That was early on.
Yeah. And all we did with this is we added the interchange to our master plan. It isn't on the RPO plan or list. I looked through and I thought it was, but it isn't. It's just on our master plan. So we need to add it to the RPO list in order for UDOT to be able to assist with some funding. So
what's that process to get on the RPO list?
Here.
So the process is the RTAC considers it, and then it gets approved by the TEC in November. Generally, we only adopt it once a year. But we wanted to get the conversation started here today so we could say, hey, UDOT, we're considering this. We've been having discussions. So when they're ready to fund us, they know that we're buying into the project, that we're all engaged in it and stuff like that.
It just helps UDOT because it is our system, but it impacts regional transportation. So we want to avoid going in and just doing stuff without coordinating with everybody else in the area. So that's why we say we would really like to get it on your guys' plan and say that way everybody can say yes, the whole regional area buys off, this is a need, rather than just UDOT coming in and doing acting separately. And so it's just more of UDOT trying to make sure that we're coordinating well with all the local governments rather than just coming acting independently. So.
Yeah, I just say if we, I know, and I appreciate that we aren't out of the loop. I'm not saying that. It's just before they put in hard structures right now, whether that entrance just needs to go west a little, their permanent entrance, and that's something that we should have looked at and considered, or at least alleviate the, figure out that we're going to alleviate any of the vegetation problems that happen on that corner.
Okay, and they seem to be very responsive. I mean, it's
I'm
not
sure
like we're working with people that
they've been good with
flatliners. They've been great, really, so far. So we can definitely bring that up.
Nobody wants to, you know, people drive way too fast, but none of us want to see a deadly accident on that curve because they won't blame their own driving.
So the curb aside, can we add this to the list? Do we need to go through RTAC and then RTEC? We wanted to have the conversation, so Chris felt comfortable starting the conversation from a funding standpoint.
Yeah, so the way it works is UDOT doesn't have to have it on our list, but they want to know that we're engaged and we're talking about this as a regional priority. When we become an MPO, it will need to be on the list. But for right now, they just want to see that where we are talking, we're planning, and we're coordinating. Is that correct, Chris?
Yeah. We've known this intersection. We talked about the interchange for a while. We just said we knew that it was out there 10 years, and we weren't worried about it. And then all of a sudden, we're thinking,
it's 2 years.
Oh man, we need to start as property develops around it. We need to have some sort of a high level plan. Otherwise, we're going to be shooting ourselves in the foot. So. It became much more important as we moved up the timeline. So it's not the interchange that's failing; it's all the infrastructure, it's all the, everything going on around it.
Yeah,
knowing
so,
it will fail.
So I have some funding that I could put to it, but we do like a little bit of a match from the local government just to make sure that they have the buy-in. The whole council knows that there's funding, local funding going to it.
Yep.
So that way, when we're completed with it. That there's a higher chance that there's buy-in to make changes to the master plan to make sure it's implemented. Because a lot of the things that are going to come out of this are going to rely on Perelman City to implement, not just UDOT. So we want to make sure that there's some match money so there's buy-in to say that you're going to implement what comes out of the plan. So
and we're putting that on the agenda for approval.
Like okay.
So, but what do you think is a good amount to put on that?
I think we're probably comfortable with 5,000.
Okay. We'll have that on the agenda and get approval on that, and we can... We feel comfortable about it.
And I don't think I'm being overly optimistic, but I think it's going to be the preferred place for people to stop and get gas, just because they can see everything. It's, you know, even Thornock was like, oh, I always stop in Perelman because it's easy to get on and off. And I was like, wow, that's like pretty high recommendation because he knows the road. But I think this is going to be busy, busy. We talked about it a few years ago, and you're like, 20 years out, that could accelerate, and like, here we are.
That's the problem is we were looking at just the roadway in between. Mm-hmm. And that cell has a lot of capacity. But the fact that we're having intersections there that are close together and no room for turn movements or turn lanes, it's going to congest really fast, and so we need to figure out something there.
And people are already doing weird things. I found myself doing weird things. Because you don't realize that it's on you, and then you've got to do that, and then what are you going to do? You're pulling the KB. You just have to do weird stuff. And I just see the population, just especially people not familiar with the area, I mean, just accidents just because people are like, wait, what? It's weird. Mm-hmm. I don't have a better word.
It's a good word.
Awkward. I should say it's unsafe. That's the best word to use. So is that it on that? We don't need to make a motion vote, anything like that. We just need to have it on the minutes that we're coordinating, talking about it, working on it.
Yeah.
I had somebody the other day when I pulled into Perelman. They thought they were going to pull left.
Mm-hmm.
They get in the turn lane, and it's a truck. And then they realize, I've got to pull into KB to turn around. And so
exactly.
I'm pulling past them, and they're trying to...
Well, and there's an intersection on down. They're supposed to go down to the next intersection and work their way back around into that commercial stuff. But people, if they're confused, they'll just jump the curb or go around.
They really do.
And you sit there and watch it. It happens over and over.
The curb's already getting trashed.
Because everybody...
Well, they've already missed the sign, turn around ahead.
Yeah.
Because
they're past, halfway past the KB.
So sorry, Chris.
Hopefully we can get it figured out.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we're going to move to we're going to the Transportation Expo planning update, and that's Nate.
Okay, this one will be quick. The RTAC has been doing a lot of the coordination for the Transportation Expo. At the last RTAC meeting, we just got the message to say, hey, just pick a date and mm-hmm. go with it. So we did. It'll be Thursday, October 9th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. It's going to be at Festival Hall. And the RTAC will continue to coordinate the planning efforts and outreach activities for that. And we have a good idea of what transportation-related booths that we want to invite. So we'll try to keep you up to date until every RTEC until then, because it's going to be pretty soon. So
you said it was the 9th?
Yeah, the 9th.
At what time?
3 to 7.
So are our cities going to need to have booths? Or?
Yeah, we'll want all the cities to have booths. Some of the smaller ones may or may not. Like, I'm not sure if Mayor Allred's not here, Canaraville or Paraguna is going to want to do that, but we can coordinate with them and see if they want to do a booth or maybe share with the county or something like that. But we'll have UDOT, we'll have the cities. The RPO, we'll do one with I'll make a map with our long-range plan to put up so people can ask questions about that. And we're looking at low-cost advertising through the cities and the county, and so their social media and things like that. But we're pretty far along the way at this point, and I'm really excited to see how the public reacts to this. It'll be great.
I'm sure that Brian had would be. You've got so much change going on. That would be great if you could present something.
You do. I'm sure we can.
That gondola you're
on. St. George.
This is a great segue into our next piece, which is our local transportation projects. So we can start. Who wants to start on that side? Are you the first person, or does anyone else have anything, Richard? Okay, local transportation projects.
Do you want to talk about it? Or you
want studies and updates.
Oh, do you want the mayor
hello.
To okay, so we're hoping to, we're working, Chris, what's the name of the grant that we have on the shuttle stops?
It's a TIF first mile, last mile.
First and last mile grant, that's right. We got a first and last mile grant to do some shuttle stops and crosswalks along Highway 143 in Bryanhead, and we're working on the design for that right now. Getting pretty close, I think. That's really the only transportation adjacent project that we've got going on. We don't necessarily plan on doing a whole lot of like adding lanes or things like that in Bryanhead, so we're just trying to get people out of their cars as much as we can. Transit's a big piece of that, so the shuttle stops here are going to be good. Pedestrians being able to get around using the crosswalks is also going to be very good. And UDOT's been involved, I think, in the past in that paved trail project that we've done, and at least on portions of it, and with various grants. And so the crosswalks will kind of tie that all in nicely. Really, be able to walk anywhere you want in Bryanhead, particularly during the summer, but also, we're going to snow off the paved trail in the winter, and you should be able to walk around wherever you want without having to move your car from your condo parking lot or whatever. So that's what we're aiming at there. I appreciate everybody's help, UDOT's help, certainly, and everybody that's been pushing for this one for a handful of years now. But we're hoping to have that bid out as early as June and completed by the end of by the fall.
Great. All right. Do you want to do fair ones? They're probably on the top of your mind.
Sure.
Your tongue.
Everybody knows we're moving full steam ahead on our bridge. Finalize the design. we're going with a two large poured-in-place culverts. And when I say large, they will handle the 100-year storm. That's how big they are. I think they're like 24 feet across. We had a public meeting, and one of the things that was really apparent, the public wanted to see sidewalks on both sides, that with the bridge style we had, in order to have the active transportation trail on the one side, we could only have that, and we couldn't have a sidewalk on the other side. When we went to the poured-in-place culvert design, it actually gave us some different geometry and things like that, and which allowed us to have a sidewalk on both sides and still tie it in with our active transportation. There's a 12-foot trail on that side. And the other advantage with this new design is that there's actually dirt in between the top of the culverts and the roadway, which adds insulation, so it's icing isn't as big of a problem, which was a concern because it's essentially on a curve. So we are just absolutely happy, tickled pink, that of all of the advantages to that, the one disadvantage is that it is a culvert. I mean, is that there will be essentially that middle break. And we talked about, this is a flood channel, and I got a great line in, Rich, you would have been proud of me, and I said, you engineers design for water, and then what we deal with is debris. But we feel like even with debris that comes out of the flood channel, it should. They originally had four smaller culverts, and I was like, no, 24 foot wide, it should be able to take trees through it. I hope the day never comes that we get all of Brianhead's burned trees coming down through in a flash flood. I hope that day never comes, but I've sat there with many of you all and in the flood channel in Cedar City while it was just completely full of trees. It looked like Oregon, like they were logging miles of trees inside the flood channel. So hopefully we never see that day. Parowan has never really had a channel full of debris. It's mainly been gravel and sand. Even the flood that we had after in 2018, that was after the 2017 fire, didn't have tons of trees. But all those trees that are sticks, you know, that are sitting there, sooner or later, if the right storm hits the right place, it could be a factor. So we designed around that. I think we still feel good about it. But we're just excited about that project. Corridor Preservation Fund, transaction was complete. We purchased the property. Design is, all the alignment, everything is done, and now they're just moving forward with all the other fun stuff we get to deal with federal, prairie dogs and historical and all that stuff. We get all that stuff wrapped up, we'll go out to bid this fall, and build up this winter and spring. So we're getting ahead of that. We have to do our water project first, and that is out to bid as we speak. And that's a huge, huge project. We're running a 36-inch pipeline right down through right by the bridge, right through the worst utility complex in the city, and a 24-inch line on the east side of the city, and relocating the diversion. So lots of stuff going on. What else from a transportation standpoint?
I don't know if anything around development annexation matters in this meeting.
One thing I do want to say is on the north end of Parowan, it's on our list. It's been on there for a while, and that's the realignment of the Paragona Highway 274. The city had been acquiring property to get ready for that alignment. And same thing, we're seeing commercial development all around that starting to pop up and ask questions. And I'm telling them, guys, this is no longer going to be a road in the future. I wouldn't plan your business around it. And it's become very apparent that we need to get on that. I think we have all the right-of-way acquired we need to. We just need to take it to the next step. I'm wondering if there's any design, high-level design work of that realignment. Do you know?
I don't remember seeing any.
Because that's probably the next phase. We need to start putting it up on higher on the priority to actually get some design work.
Do you remember, Chris? I know that you were in the office like 3 years ago, and it was just lines on the map, you know, just squaring that up.
Because I remember we had quite a few conversations in this group about it, and we kind of got to the point where what was drawn there, where everybody was comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and Cleve had worked through acquiring properties and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just now we're at the point where people are wanting to develop around it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, can we get a break? No, we cannot. That is the answer to that. People are in let's build mode. So anyways.
Hey, Dan.
Get hired.
I just had a thought about the
for an adroto alignment. I should have thought of this when you called me a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
We just adopted the corridor preservation priority list. Well, we want to have this on the draft for next year's adoption.
I don't know if that'll be a corridor preservation.
If you need to buy property through some of those farms.
Is a frontage road regional enough to be on the corridor preservation map?
I would say yes.
It doesn't have to be regional to be on the list. Anything in your jurisdiction would qualify for your... It doesn't have to be a regional project.
Oh, I thought it did.
No. Cities can apply for their own within their own infrastructure or within their own planning area.
So if I guess let me say this. There's this that whole weird section, everybody knows that place where it's all muddy when you get off the freeway. And it looks like just don't drive your truck through there, you'll never get it back out.
That's what I've always thought.
Hopefully we fix the drainage part of that. That's all technically city / UDOT right away, no lines, and nor does anybody care. If we realign that and we move that road and do some property trades, we may not even need to acquire corridor. If we can make everybody whole from an acreage standpoint and have that nonsense area just be incorporated into property as we shift that road, we may be able to just do this whole thing without acquiring corridor. But that's assuming that UDOT's comfortable with that.
Yeah, I'd have to defer to our right-of-way group.
So if not, we'll add it to the list and go through that. But
one of the other roads I think would be worth mentioning in the Carolyn area is in coordination with the Master Plan Fairgrounds effort, 100 North, consideration and how that goes through and the coordination with the county might just be worth mentioning. Given the county's interest in trying to do the master plan for the park and for the fairgrounds and coordinating with the city. Yeah. So we want to keep that on our radar as well.
Yeah.
Anything specifically about adding it to lists or anything? Or just
no, just to make people aware and coordinating together.
Okay.
Absolutely. And how it loops around through to the south end of the park and comes back out to 43. So we have good circulation through that area.
Maybe in the next meeting you guys could bring your master plan concept. It's better than my little dotted line on a map on our transportation master plan. You think?
Well, you know, for the fairgrounds you're talking about, I don't know that we'll have any more than what they had last time in our discussion, but yeah, as soon as we have something there. That
were you there the other day?
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. That's what you mean by last time.
No.
Agreed.
The last meeting.
Yep. I couldn't remember if you were there. You were, I remember you.
Okay.
And that's like a 2026 build, probably, or
possibly. The
commissioners, when they fund, but there would be aspects of it that could be done.
That's what I mean. Uh-huh. Okay.
There could be one structure. The one that was the goal structure could probably. Mm-hmm. Now that we know a better place to put it, that would be that indoor arena. That's the real hole. Yeah. So it could.
Right.
Some better parking would be good.
Yeah.
So everybody left us, but the county's still here.
Anything from the county?
Not beyond what I think we've already discussed. I'm not aware of anything. Rich might want to do a little update on Iron Springs build.
Yeah, we've got that. We're just now finalizing the contract with Stanley for that. They were the select preferred designer. We're just looking at their proposal, going through the numbers, and probably by tomorrow we'll go back to them as an approved bid. We met yesterday online with Kent about the High T and Iron Springs Road and 56. So the things are moving forward. We hope to have that out. I believe the High T will be out to bid by August. And we hope to be out to bid on Iron Springs with the design by December so that we can start in the spring. We want to try to get out ahead of contractors filling up their schedules.
Did anything come out of that? Was that weird friction when we were at that meeting with Celeste about the high T. The Nichols, I think, had problems with that. Did that all get ironed out?
Well, Nichols, no. Sometimes Frank forgets what I show him. He was saying he didn't know. I've actually shown him the UDOT sketches of the high T, and I've got even the 60% now, which is, you know, Frank's a good guy. He's just thinking ahead, and he wants to make his plans and stuff like that. So, yeah. So
that's the plan, though. It's not deviating. That's my point.
Yesterday we had a little pushback with Kent, which I was just discussing with Chris, but I don't think he's been in on these meetings enough to know that we don't. The concern he has was discussed at length, and we feel like the belt route will connect to Iron Springs before the high T becomes over capacity from the west side. That was his concern, that we're narrowing it down a little bit at the high T from two lanes. We're taking one of those two lanes and making it a buffer lane and forcing a left at Iron Springs and a through traffic. But I think, and I was just talking to Chris, I think the county will go out and do some counts, and we can show the numbers don't justify worrying about things west of 57. Even things between 57 and Iron Springs, the turn out of Iron Springs is the eastern traffic. That is where the traffic is coming. It's not out of Burrell and Newcastle. In his mind, he's imagining that we're losing capacity, and I don't think we are. And
there's plenty of capacity on that road, so even if we do lose some, there's still oodles of room to handle the traffic.
Yeah, primarily it's we chose this as a safe, yeah, for safety feature more than I mean, we knew we felt we weren't losing capacity. We were trying to make it safer, and so.
And if you can maybe right, there may be a small reduction in capacity, but where we don't have any capacity issues, it's well worth it for the safety benefits.
And we'll pick up that capacity again if we can link Iron Spring to the 57 crossing, which is less than a mile.
And take 57 down to 56, 5700 West from Iron Springs down and connect it to Highway 56.
Yeah.
Then it takes away that capacity question.
Yeah. Right. We'll lose traffic coming off of 56. That's what I tried to say. Thanks, Reed. Appreciate that clarification. So I think, and that's what we talked to, Justin and I talked to him about. We've discussed this for years as a egg before the chicken before the egg. What were the impact of carrying the belt route through on the intersection, vice versa. But I think the immediate and best fix is what's being designed now. And I think even a small change will not be justified in the short term, because the long term is. I expect to see that we'll be doing that section between Iron Springs and 56 much sooner. Maybe within, if we can find some funding, we'll try to get that done.
The other thing I would mention, if I might, is that the Inland Port Authority is finally ready to go out to RFP on the RAISE grant that they got several years ago to do an evaluation of the infrastructure needs in the Iron Springs area. And they've sent that over for our input. And we are, you know, trying to evaluate how, and I sent Rich a copy of it. This is just fairly new. But if anybody has any thoughts about infrastructure out in that Iron Springs area, we're open to make sure that the grant proposal includes evaluating that. We have the belt route, we have Iron Springs Road, we have the railroad crossing at 5700 West, and consideration of how Iron Springs Road terminates. All those considerations for the inland port study. So if anybody has any other thoughts about that, things that we want to make sure we include, that this RFP would anticipate covering, and that we can include in the study, please let me know.
Okay. I think they're going to discuss sewer and power as well.
Yeah, power, electric, all of the infrastructure, but anything related to transportation especially, we want to make sure is addressed.
Especially from this group, yeah. And I was just saying to Matt, Nate, I'd asked, just FYI, I'd asked before that Iron Springs, and I just noticed it too late, but number two, I wanted that the preservation fund to include everything to WECO, not to stop at Antelope Road, so that in the future, if we want to acquire property all the way to WECO, because we're just seeing more industry happening. Even, you know, it's surprising, but WECO is only 10 miles out there. You feel like it's a long way. It's not. And there's a lot of opportunity, and people are pushing to develop other things. So we're going to make, how did you say that, Nate? An administrative note that was the intent?
Maybe, I'm not sure the proper way to do that, but if we can make that an administrative, because I forgot to add it to that, that'd be fine. But maybe we can make an amendment at the next meeting, just say, hey, this was intended to be this. I missed it. Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
You guys can talk to Rob.
Rob. Okay, I'll talk to Rob.
I just had a couple of updates for UDOT projects. So Enix City interconnection study, we're kicking that off next Monday. So we'll start doing that study. And then also our I-15 project from the rest area, Mount Post 43 to 56, right before Cedar, adding in another lane. We just got our bids back. The apparent little bid is Sunrock, so we'll probably end up awarding it to Sunrock unless there's something that comes out. And they should probably be starting in the next 2 or 3 months on that, so there'll be construction there for a year, maybe 18 months, to build that additional lane from Rest Area to right before Cedar City.
Do you have anything to share with the roundabout there at the Hamilton Port?
So it's that, I heard part from of that Gavin. Project, and so it was bid too, so it'll be built at the same time.
Just like
it was part of that project, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just like we were just discussing with the planning in Parowan for the on and off, what do we need to do to add a study for the west side of alignment there? Because we had some preliminary thoughts.
Because the three lanes is just all on the northbound, right? On the east side.
Yeah.
That's all.
Right. But we've talked to some property owners who were wondering, as they come out from under that and go west, that alignment, whether it should remain the same or whether we should adjust it, because they want to, just like you guys have got there, Dan and Mayor, they've got eyes on the prize of commercial opportunities, and I would like to see us consider, is that alignment to the west of that intersection needing adjusting before we start building? We just had somebody come in our office and they've got a buyer that's looking to put a, guess what? Yeah. A service station down there on the down short of the tribal lands. So on the west side. So
yeah, so that one right there is probably a TPA grant application would be a good option. We could also possibly talk doing like maybe a 50-50 split for a solutions development study. If the county can come up with some planning funds, UDOT can try and match it, and we can try and get something done sooner rather than later there.
Thanks, Chris.
Anything else? Is it there needs to be anything else?
I think that's the only two I had.
Commissioner? Senator?
Have you got any money? We've all talked about spending it.
I saw you texting. Were you finding money?
I've got a bill I got to pay.
The kind you pay, not the kind you pass. Okay.
Yeah. I don't have anything on transportation. A couple of other things, just real quick. You probably followed some of the veto situation with some bills. There will not be a veto override session. There's a couple of those bills, probably three, I think, that we visited with the governor, and there's some potential fixes to those. So we're planning on the governor calling a special session in August to bring those in. Now, with that, you know, anytime you open the door in a special session, then all sorts of ornaments want to go on. And there is one in particular that I've had questions about, specifically from Cedar City and county cities in Washington counties. The bill was SB 67. That was Senator Owens' bill that he and Representative Elison ran. They literally died 30 seconds before, maybe a minute and a half before clock struck 12. They had to come back over for concurrence, and they were physically handing the bill to the president on, you know, clock. Now that we've got electronic clocks, we can't put the hood over the clock and, you know, or set it back, you know. So anyway, it passed. That's the one that allows for a city, currently a county can do it, but it allows for a city to put on the ballot whether they want to increase sales tax for purpose of fire and EMS. And so that there's a good set. What I'm hearing, there's probably a pretty good chance that bill will be on the special session.
Good.
Yeah. And then the other question, maybe it's just a question. I really, to be honest with you, I haven't had a lot of conversation about prairie dogs for some time, but I did have one yesterday with an individual. And so help me understand, you know, Reed, you probably know as much as anybody, maybe someone else in the room, but I know when the state had it and the feds took it back over, that's when I was talking to Kevin Bunnell at that time, DWR, that it appeared that they were going to use a plan similar to what the state had used. But I just don't know what's transpired in those few years as far as an individual who have, if they have a property they want to develop, how they, you know, how friendly it is to get rid of those dogs so they can move them off.
We're operating off of the 2018 general conservation plan that goes through 2028. That has been successful and that we've been operating off of all of that time. It'll expire in 2028, so U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is working on how to renew that and extend that. That's the plan that we've been operating on. But in the meantime, DWR state has submitted what they call a management strategy, conservation management strategy, that petitions for the delisting. And there are several things that have to take place as the Fish and Wildlife Service review that. And it could be, you know, 6, 8, 10 years before a decision is made on that. Yeah. So in the meantime, we're continuing to operate off of this general conservation plan. Now, part of what you may have heard about is the concern about we have a major development zone and a minor development zone. And in the minor development zone, in the peripheral areas, there's a lot more development occurring than what was anticipated when we did the plan in 2018. And the cost of mitigation in those areas is significantly higher than it is in the major development zone. And so Fish and Wildlife Service also wanted to look at subdivisions as a whole rather than allowing the division of property and allowing each property owner to take care of the mitigation themselves because it was at a much smaller rate. And so that costs, you know, in one case, you know, the bill to mitigate that property was like $350,000. For mitigation on that property, and they did a what they call a subdivision mitigation strategy agreement with that developer to say this is how we can assign a value to each lot, and at the time that the lot is developed, they pay that mitigation rather than the subdivider have to pay it up front. And that's caused some concern about the values of some of those properties. So I'd visit with you, you know, after I can answer a specific question. But generally, it's been working well, and we're getting along fine on the general conservation plan that we're operating off of currently.
Okay.
What's the plan after 2028?
Well, we would renew that conservation plan would be extended. We would you know, give it another 10 years is what they're thinking, while the delisting process goes through the channels.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
So is 10 years a realistic delisting time frame?
That's an outside window. It should occur in less time than that if it meets the criteria. DWR Spring counts this year. They just came back and said, this is the first year in 3 years that we didn't meet the recovery goal of 1,000 counted dogs on protected lands in Iron County in the West Desert Recovery Unit. And so, you know, that's on kind of the old rule. The new proposal to delist, that's not part of the recovery criteria. So all those things have to be ironed out. But it ebbs and flows, even though the total count is higher than it's been, you know, in many years, if ever, in the West Desert. Protected and public lands didn't have 1,000 counted dogs, even though the total count of dogs in Iron County was like, or in the West Desert was like 13,000. They're all on private property.
Here's that many off of 2,300 over by the airport.
Key County.
Yeah, exactly. And I go by there.
So it's frustrating to work through that process.
The whole village over there.
It is.
All right. Do we have any other discussion items? I have a really quick one. So I was road tripping in the south, and I saw these areas that were safety corridors with fines doubled. And I thought, hey, that might be a solution for our main street where we have all the pedestrian crossing. We're talking about extreme overlapping efforts to identify our intersections and, you know, signs, flags, striping, brick or art across the crosswalks. I mean, all these different ideas, but I was like, all you have to do is see safety corridor fines doubled, and it's like, whoa, better slow down. And so I talked to Matt Rhodes to begin with. He talked to Ann Ogden. They think it's actually a great idea. UDOCA doesn't currently do it anywhere, as far as they knew, but they said that each jurisdiction could do it if they change the ordinance to have the law enforcement aligned with the fines doubled by. But I'm just throwing it out to the group because I haven't moved on it at all. It's just, you know, something I was like, that would really resolve a lot of what happens with our corridors that we know we have a lot of issues with pedestrians, because a safety corridor just feels like a really significant statement to me. And it's not a lot of signs. It's usually on the beginning and end coming in on both sides. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out to the group to see if you'd like the idea of pursuing something like that. Either Carolyn can kind of flagship it, or for your communities. I know Brian probably has other areas where it's like, yeah, this is where everybody tends to cross, or we just want people to go slower. But I thought it was received with positive, you know, recommendation, but we just need to kind of get down into the detail and decide if we want to pursue that. Do you know anything about it? Have you ever seen anything about that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I heard about what you were talking about, mm-hmm. And so I guess the other states that I've seen it is like in construction zones, they double fines, but I've never heard applied to a safety corridor. But I think if that works, then that helps keep the speed down.
What is it called in our new active transportation plan, our downtown area? We had it, it's called a
pedestrian mall.
Pedestrian mall. We would probably do that in what is already identified in our plan as a pedestrian-centric, you know, area.
I think from my experience, coordinating with the law enforcement to make sure they know, feel like it's enforceable, mm-hmm. and also with some of the attorneys to say, you know, it's not just going to get thrown out if they do double fines,
mm-hmm.
I think that would be the route to go first, especially if you talk to Ann.
Mm-hmm.
She said, yeah, that's something that UDOT's okay with, then we're good to go forward with it. But oftentimes we see those things in the law enforcement struggle to enforce them, or they just get thrown out because of the technicality. So I think that making sure that that avenue was taken care of would be critical.
Yeah. And our chief liked it. He thought it was a great idea. It just would be something, especially local people, a few tickets, and that would help. And then people coming in and out of town would just recognize they needed to be aware that that was obviously a safety concern area. And it's just at a point we always worry too many signs. But if we could accomplish more with a few signs, that would be the goal. All right, so a motion to close the PROTECT meeting.
So moved.
Do you have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, now a motion to open the ICOG meeting. Do we open it, or do I just welcome? Welcome.
Oh, yeah,
welcome, everyone. Approve the agenda for March 7th, 2025.
I don't think we have a quorum.
Oh, we don't have a quorum anymore?
Yeah. One, two, three. They all left.
So we can't do it. We don't even discuss anything.
Basically, we don't open the meeting. We can have a discussion, but we can't be allude to making any type of motions.
Okay. So we have to skip three because that's going to be an action. The America 250 and Utah 250, I brought handouts because that's my item. A group has been brought together, and Tyler and myself and Dan and Brett are on this committee. It's the America 250 because it's 250 years past 1776 and 2026. And so we had just kind of a brainstorming session a couple weeks ago, and the second page is what that was all about. I don't know why I feel like I need to walk around. And then one of the moves that is Mayor Staley down in Washington made, that's the last page, and it's in color just because I thought you'd appreciate it more in color. But it's a letter talking about what they're doing to recognize. And when I mentioned to Scott Phillips, you know, some of the ideas that I had, and he also knew that we had this meeting today, he said, will you bring that idea to this meeting? So Enoch already handed me theirs. They're going to do their logo for their city, red, white, and blue. Parowan's in the process of making our Old Rock Church logo red, white, and blue for that year. So that's just an example and a suggestion and something our cities might do. And everything else is really just for you to consider for yourself what would be right for you. One of the neat things is there is going to be grant money available that we can all apply for, so each city can apply. Brett, did they say $1,500 or $1,800? It's something that we could at least do something with, either to piggyback on an event, create a new event, you know, put up some additional flags. There's a lot of neat things we could do, but that's just bringing that to this group so you can start thinking about it. You see everyone that's on that committee. If you feel like you were missed and really would love to be, you probably could let Scott Phillips know, and he would add you to it. I actually just asked Jamie Evans, who's the Iron County Fair today. I said, I think you should be on this committee. We could theme the fair, proud to be an American, and do red, white, and blue themes for our entries, maybe flag photographs, because beautiful flag photos, I think, would really resonate. And she thought that was great. I can't imagine they're going to say, no, we don't want the Iron County Fair on the committee. It was probably just an oversight. But anyone that you think should be on, you know, I'm sure they're open to more people. They really want this to be really neat. And I'm always about the next generation, you know, just bringing them to center on some civic education. Maria suggested that every single 10,000 students got a copy of the Constitution. I suggested an essay contest of what it means to be free. And then when I talked to Jamie, she said maybe the rodeo royalty could be the people that promote that and judge that and present the award winners at the fair or something. So we've got some runway to think about it, but I wanted to share that with you today. And that...
I just want to say real quick, have you seen the logo that Wade created, the Iron County logo? He's made some really cool logos that are variations on the existing one, and I think he's got one that's like red, white, and blue. It looks like it's made of like diamond plate instead of glove. It's really cool. I had it on my email when I left, before I left the county. I was like, who's going to tell me I can't have this as my email logo? But the county has a cool logo you can use. Is the state doing anything crazy?
Yeah, there's quite actually some big deals coming out. I think it's centering around the Lieutenant Governor's office, but... Yeah, there are some significant plans, and I know that they'll want to. I'm assuming they're probably kind of working with you on a coordination. Do you know?
At this meeting, they didn't talk about anything on state level, but it was just kind of a getting to know you meeting and just starting to think.
I just more what I've heard is just, you know, some of the overall plans, you know, the bigger plans, you know, but there is a significant amount of effort going into that. So we funded some money for that. So.
Anyone else know anything about that? Have the commissioners talked about it at all?
Okay. No.
So we're optimistic that we're going to make it to one more year. Then. Sweet.
Good. You don't get to sleep yet, Dan.
Brett looks at me.
Do we have any other mayor commissioner updates? We might have hit most of them. Do we have any additional updates we want to share?
I think we got them all.
Okay. we even adjourn if we don't have a quorum?
No.
Okay. As you were then.
You can always adjourn.
We've got to tell Cedar City not to schedule the budget hearing sooner.
Well, I can think of us, they're late. But
maybe next year I'll try to do this on a good.
They didn't feed us. They didn't show up, and then they take half our quorum. Come on, Cedar City.
So,
refer them to
me. Let me hit the
record. Yeah, let's find out where we're at.
I was kind of thinking.